Okay, we're off. Number two in our journey over here. First of all, yisher koach to everyone for waiting for the ungodly delay. Bit of a crisis getting here, but thank God we made it. Shabbat Hashem. No one will have to hear about it. But it was averted. So in the this series of discussions that we're having are trying to make clarity of the narrative that we find in the Torah from the creation story through the formation of Klal Yisrael, started by Avraham Avinu, which many of these narratives seem very very disparate and disconnected. Sometimes very ambiguous, and as we saw last time in Chazal asserts that the Torah leaves them often intentionally ambiguous. And Bezrat Hashem will touch on that hopefully next shiur, why some of these stories are left intentionally ambiguous, which is an interesting point in and of itself. But be that as it may, all of these stories are really a progression in world history, and they involve real people and real scenarios and real motivations, and people are always rational beings. It's not to say that people always choose the best option. That's not what that means, to say that people are rational beings. But what it does mean is that people respond to situations in order to obtain a certain result. That's always their intention, And as bizarre as things seem on the surface, to dismiss them as bizarre, untethered thinking is a mistake. And really, if we examine these things closely, we can see a very, very powerful progression at the individual and the collective level that led to the societal, let's say, milieu in which the story of Avraham Avinu takes place. Last time we talked about what the dystopian society of the tower looked like. That it was a group of people that they had decided to focus on one thing and one thing only that was going to be the sole value of the society, which was generated out of a mechanistic worldview that took out all of the moral or ethical or spiritual, perhaps is a better word, significance of anything that happened. And as the Rambam puts it so powerfully, that the minute a person starts looking at the world through the mechanistic lens, he has chosen the path of cruelty, derech achzarius, because not only is it horribly cruel to rip away the empowerment from the individual, or from even for the group, to say that you have no control, in the end of the day, you have no control over anything that happens, And you are disconnected from all the events in the world, but also it leads someone to this frame of mind, which he will increase his cruelty. Derech ha'achzarius v'yosif tzara al tzara, as the Rambam says, they will increase calamity upon calamity. They'll only make things worse, because once you have that fatal conceit that the world is a mechanistic machine, you end up committing atrocity after atrocity. And this is what the Tower Society looked like. And Avraham is in that society. He's there in the epicenter of it. And his movement that he creates is it goes up against that worldview. It goes up against that worldview, and this is what triggers Avraham Avinu's journey into Canaan. We examined how that played into the war of four and five kings, about how the invasion of Canaan was essentially triggered by the Avraham Avinu movement. So that's more or less where we left off. Now I wanted to go back and examine some notes to get in. There's many parallel lines of thought that are going on in these stories. There's the geopolitical aspect, there's the spiritual aspect, meaning the ideological battle that's going on between Avraham and the dominant society. It's not just monotheism versus paganism. That's a very simplistic way of looking at it. Obviously, that has to do with that. But the implications of these things, to break them down to really understand what that means, right, is very important. And then, of course, there's the cosmic significance of what patterns are these showing us for the progression of world history, which, again, Bezrat Hashem, we'll talk about next week. But I want to focus on now about the ideological implications of what Avraham Avinu was doing, how that fit in, how that fits in with the narrative that goes on, and how this is embodied in the people of Sodom, the people of, or more accurately, that whole region. Sodom is just the center, as the Torah makes clear. Sodom ubenoseh, Sodom and all the satellite cities. So Sodom is the primary city, and then you have four other cities that are, you know, subsidiaries, so to speak, to Sodom. And what is going on with these people? And why is this such an important thing? Obviously, it's important. It could be an important thing to highlight the fact that God decides to wipe out a whole society. But the fact that Avram is so connected to this place, and that he has a nephew there, and that God consults him before he does this. And there's this whole back and forth between Avram and God about Sodom, right, about the fate of Sodom. So let's jump in. I'm reading from the Tur, from Rabbeinu Yaakov ben Asher in Choshen Mishpat Simen Aleph. Rabbi Meshum ben Gamliel Omer. He quotes from Chazal in Maseches Avos, Al Shlosha Devarim Ha'olam Kayam, Al Adin Va'al Emes Va'al Hashalom. On judgment, on truth, and on peace. And he brings Rabbeinu Yonah's commentary, Shebishvil Shlosha Devarim Elu Nivra Ha'olam, that for the purpose of these things, the foundations of existence itself is dependent on these things being implemented, on people upholding these principles. Vezek Kavonas Rabbeinu, says the Torah, this is what Chazal need in the Gemara in Shabbat. It says Kol Hadon Din Emes LaAmito Kiilu Nasa Shutaf LaKadosh Baruch Hu. Anyone who judges a judgment in truth, he becomes a partner with God in the creation. Ki HaKadosh Baruch Hu bara ha'olam lios kayam. Because God wanted the world in order for it to be continuous. A complex system cannot be set up and just left to be. It requires maintenance. It requires maintenance. You can make, this is by the way, a distinction between complicated and complex. Complicated means that there's just a lot of moving parts. A clock is complicated. But once you make the clock and you wind it up, you could basically leave it. You could leave it be. But complex systems, one of the features of something that's complex is that it requires maintenance. It requires maintenance. That's why every year you hear about, I don't know, there's people here who are into tech and things like this, but you hear every year about these conferences, the attempts to build the perpetual mobile. Does anyone know what that is? Perpetual mobile? Huh?
Yeah, it's perpetual mobile.
A machine that will make itself continue, like a machine that by moving it generates its own energy. And this is a shame because it's been basically proven that no such thing exists or can exist. It can't be that there could be a machine that's self-perpetuating. That right? Something that's complex requires maintenance, and what's being told to us is that yes, there is maintenance on the superficial level. You need to feed yourself, you need to water yourself, you need to make sure you're not in extreme temperature and all that. But what's at the base of this maintenance, what's at the foundation, are three things. The emes, the shalom, and the din. Though that is the maintenance of the world. If you don't have these three things, the world begins to collapse. And that's why someone who upholds these principles becomes a shutaf with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as the Gemara says. He becomes a partner with God in the creation of the world, because God brought it into being and you're maintaining it. Nimsa Shahadayan, we're skipping forward a little bit in the Torah. Nimsa Shahadayan, Mishabes Zeros Ramos Arishayim, the judge who breaks the might of the wicked, the Lokech Miadam Teref, and takes back what was stolen by them, Umachziro Lebaalav, Mekayim Ha'olam. He maintains the world. V'garam l'hashlim ratzon abore, and he completes the will of the Creator. Shevro lios kayam, that again he created the world in order to have continuity. V'havi ki ilu nasa shutuf l'kadosh baruch hu b'briya, and he becomes a partner with God in the creation. V'avram avinu, Avram our father, lo yado Hashem, God did not know him, v'kro o avi, and did not call him my beloved. Ela al asher holoch b'derech hamishpat, because he walked in this path of judgment, of proper judgment. V'hidrich bo as banav, and he committed to guide his children in this path. Kidichziv, as it says in this week's parsha, in Parshas Vayera, in the 18th chapter of Sefer Bereishis, ki yedativ, because I know him, I have known him, says God, leman asher yitzaveh es banav es beisav acharav, that he should command his children after him, v'shamru derech Hashem, to guard the path of God, la'asos tzedakah u'mishpat, because he will uphold these principles. U'moshe Rabbeinu alav ha-shalom, rabban shel kol ha-neviim, the master of all prophets, Moshe, Lokach Eitzas Atzas Yisro Beinyan Hamishpat. He applied the counsel of his in-law Yisro in order to more efficiently establish Mishpat in the Jewish people. And this was the lead-in to Matan Torah, as we all know. And the Torah continues to list all the great leaders of the Jewish people that their greatness was characterized by the fact that they implemented Tzedakah and Mishpat, Yehoshua. Going down all the way to David HaMelech, Yoshio, all the great kings and leaders of the Jewish people. Ve'gam Melech HaMashiach, says the Torah. The Mashiach she'igaleh b'mehirah v'yameinu, that should be revealed speedily in our days. Meshabcho HaPasuk, the verse praises him. Bederech Mishpat, the fact that he was strong in the path of Mishpat. As it says in Yishayo, in Perek Yud Aleph, Ve'shofat b'tzedek dalim, that he will judge with righteousness the downtrodden, the hochiach b'mishor le'inve eretz, and he will give rebuke in a straight manner regarding the poor of the earth. What we see from the Torah is a very, very powerful through line that tzedakah and mishpat was the necessity, were the essential attributes that were required to maintain the bria. They were abandoned by the initial generations of the world. Avram Avinu was chosen because he was able to implement these things. He was the one that was able to implement tzedakah and mishpat. And indeed, it will be these qualities. It was these qualities that carried the Jewish people through history, and it will be these qualities that will bring the final geula. There's something about tzedakah and mishpat that's very, very important. Very, very important.
Tzion b'mishpat tipadeh
v'shaveh b'tzedakah. Right. So, again, tzedakah and mishpat are the foundational themes that are necessary to maintain the world and are necessary to bring the world to its final fruition. What are these qualities? What are these qualities? And why is it so important? So in order to give an answer to this question, Rabosai, we need to go all the way back to the beginning of creation. As the Torah tells us, the world was created in order so that it could be sustained, and tzedakah and mishpat are the things that sustain it. So let's take a look how the world looked before, and how things looked after it was broken, and how tzedakah and mishpat are supposed to play a role in that. So, says the Sifri in Parshas Ha'azinu, Sifrin Pasha Sazinu says, Hatsur Tamim Pa'alo, the rock, God is the rock who his actions are perfect. Sier es ha'olam, he formed the world. Sier es ha'adam, he formed man. Tamim Pa'alo, everything that all the works of his hand are perfect. Pu'laso shlema al kol baya olam, ve'ein laharher achar midosav. And no one should question the perfection of his attributes. A person shouldn't say, well, things would have been better if I would have had three arms instead of two, or three eyes instead of two, etc. Would have been better if I was walking on my head instead of my head being on top of my shoulders. These things might seem absurd, but the point of the Midrash is to say that any questioning of reorganizing the structure of reality is as absurd as saying it would be better that I would walk on my head as opposed to my feet. Ki chol d'rachav mishpat. Mishpat. All of his ways are mishpat. Judgment. Proper judgment. Yoshev im kol echad ve'echad bidin v'nose no masharoi. And he gives them what is appropriate for them. He does not withhold that which is appropriate to each individual person. El emunah ve'ein avel. God is the God of faith. He is the God of faith. And there is no avel. What's a good translation for avel? Some type of cheating. There is no cheating by him. Huh?
Perverseness.
Perverseness. There you go. That's good. It has that idea of being unfair.
Perversion.
An unfair perversion. El Emunah, God is the God of faith. Says the Midrash. Shehemin ba'olam uvero. That God believed in the world and created it. He believed in the world and created it. And in addition to the simple implication, I mean, this is contained in the simple implication. The fact, right, if God has a certain action or movement, let's say, towards the world, that's not just something that God is experiencing on his end, as it were, but it is also creating that very phenomenon in the Bria itself, in being. God is the God of Emunah, that he imbued the world with this attribute of Emunah, and that allowed the world to exist. This attribute of Emunah was the impetus for the whole world to come into being. Shehemin ba'olam uvero. Hemin ba'olam uvero. Let's just analyze for a moment. What is this idea of Emunah? What does that mean? Faith. Trust. What that means is, okay, that there are distinct and disparate entities that aren't the same. They don't share the same interests necessarily. They don't have the same wants, the same desires. They're separate. They're distinct. Yet, they have the ability to cooperate with each other to the extent that each one can rely on the other. Meaning, the default, you might think, logically, if you just thought this through from a linear perspective, that if you have two parties that are distinct, and the very fact that they're distinct means that they're in competition with each other. That they're in competition. So how can one trust the other if by your very existence you have an interest in being against me? Because we're in a battle for scarce resources, as they say in Economics 101. I want this, and the fact that I want this means that if I have it, then you don't. And if you take something, it means I don't have it. So by our very existence, the fact that things exist in their very existence, there is a schism, there is a competition between things in the world. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in the world is that there could be this connection, the symbiotic connection between all the disparate parts, and despite the fact that they're distinct, and despite the fact that they're separate, and yes, despite the fact that they have competing interests, still, they are able to work in unison. They are able to be together. They're able to have emunah. He'emin ba'olam uvaro. The emunah is the basis. This trust is the basis for the whole world. Avram Avinu reintroduced this emunah to the world. Plain and simple. Avram Avinu introduced this emunah after it was broken. How was it broken, Rabbosai? So let's just do a very, very quick review of Maisa Bereishis, about the fall of mankind. HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates man and gives them the commandment to not partake of the Eitz Hadas Tov V'ra, which on its surface means the tree of Das, of awareness of Tov and Ra. And as all of the classical commentators ask, how could it be that this was a commandment to not partake of such a tree? Isn't the knowledge of Tov V'ra a good thing? Is this not a positive thing to be able to know what Tov and Ra is? The one to formulate this in the most clear way, and to formulate this question in the clearest way, was the Rambam in Chelek Aleph of Mor Nevuchim Perek Beis, second chapter of section 1 of Mor Nevuchim. The Rambam is not only good because of how he gives answers, but he's good at how he formulates questions. That's an important thing to remember, by the way. And the Rambam asks, he really drives home, how could it be that this is a bad thing? First of all, logically, how could it be, if you don't know the difference between Tov and Ra, how could you give someone a commandment to begin with? How could you even tell them to not eat from the tree? So, says the Rambam, clearly our understanding of Tov V'Ra in this context is not the general idea of a moral awareness, but rather it is a shift in man's natural moral awareness. And the way that the Rambam phrases it is that in the beginning, Adam and Chava had an awareness of moral, their moral sensibility was defined in the context of emes and sheker, truth and falsehood. And then by eating the tree, it shifted away from truth versus falsehood to tov and ra. Now this might sound very ethereal, but really nothing could be closer to us. Nothing could be closer to us. This is literally our human consciousness 101. Not only can we understand, I believe, what is going on right now, because obviously that's our state of affairs currently, that we are ensconced within Tov V'Ra, but we can also have a pretty good understanding of what Emes V'Sheker is. Zerubosai, before Adam and Chava ate from the tree, we see that there was a determiner of Tov V'Ra. HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses these terms. He uses them quite a bit. Throughout creation, at the end of every day, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu declare? Vayar Elohim Kitov. He sees that it's good. He sees that it's good. And then, towards the end of creation, at the very end, actually, when he creates man, he sees that there is only one human being, right? This androgynous creature that wasn't differentiated into male and female identities, and he declares Lo Tov, Heyos Adam Levado. It's not good for there to be only one. It's not good, not good. We see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the determiner of Tov V'Ra, of what good and bad is. God can have a perspective of what Tov and Ra is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a global perspective. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as I think we quoted in the last time we had this discussion, that the fundamental theological paradigm of the Jewish people is that God is not in the world. The world is in God. Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'ol, ein ha'olam makomo. The world is not God's place. Hu mekomo shel olam. He is the place of the world. The world is contained within HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu declares that something is good, what does that mean? It is objective, and I mean that literally. Objective in that he has a global perspective. This is inherently good for everything. You might ask, who is it good for? Everything. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu says this is good, it means it's good for everything. That's what that means. Why can't Adam and Chava eat from the Eitz Hadas? They can't eat from the Eitz Hadas because they're not everything. It's not something bad about the tree. It's not something bad about the idea of Tov V'Ra. They can't eat from the Eitz Hadas because they are not God. Only God can have the essential understanding of Tov V'Ra. Because God has inherently, that's the definition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or at least the closest definition that we can come to, that he is the consciousness that has a global perspective on reality. If a person, right, a person's perspective of Tov V'Ra, as enlightened as it could be, as wise as the person is, there is a range of the person's purview. There is a range. And before the Eitz Hadas, Adam and Chava had the perspective of morality. They were able to accept the instruction from above through the purview of Emes V'Sheker. What does Emes V'Sheker mean? It's that objectivity. That's the difference between Emes V'Sheker versus Tov V'Ra. Emes V'Sheker is objective. It's not preferential. Tov V'Ra means preferential. Chocolate is Tov and vanilla is Ra. That, right? It's a subjective thing. Right? Before the Eitz Hadas, Adam and Chava were able to receive directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu this objective Tov V'Ra, the Tov V'Ra that, again, is the basis for creation. The basis for creation. And after the Eitz Hadas, it was brought into their consciousness that the ultimate Tov V'Ra is what comes up in my mind. That's the ultimate Tov V'Ra. And in the end of the day, the ability for us to, for human beings to do anything wrong is this perspective, is the understanding that what I feel at the moment, whether it's petty vices or if it's, being ideologically possessed, it doesn't matter what it is. Ultimately, the ability for us to do wrong is based on it's based on the ability to think this way. That my understanding is the end all be all of everything. This is the shift from Tov V'Ra. Do you understand, Rabosai, how this was the first break from the concept of Emuna that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought the world into being with? Emuna is the ability for everything to be able to live in perfect balanced harmony. That despite the fact that we potentially have conflicting interests and we're in competition, we can still all be together. We can still be together in a unity. There could be a unity, a symbiotic unity in the world. But the second that people start thinking in terms of Tov V'Ra, that the ultimate good, the ultimate truth is just what happens to be in my mind, that emunah starts to break down. If I'm dealing with someone who I know thinks in this way, I know he thinks that the best good is whatever he feels is good to do at that moment. How could I trust that person? He can't think outside of his own mind. He can only think what's coming up in his consciousness at that moment. The ability for there to be a muna, for there to be this symbiotic relationship in the world between individuals and between countries, at whatever scale you want to look at it, the ability for there to be a muna is the knowledge that people can think outside of themselves, and the eating from the Eitz Hadas was the first break from this. That mankind is no longer naturally tied to this perspective, to this global perspective of what Tov V'Ra is. Now they're in a particulated perspective of what Tov V'Ra is. And this is the first breakdown of the emunah in which God brought the world into being. This continues to devolve into the pagan system, the pagan worldview. The pagan worldview is the ritualization of this perspective of the world. How is that? Because it doesn't matter which pagan system, any pagan worldview, what is the fundamental assertion of the system, the bedrock of the system, is that the world is imbued with spirit, incredibly imbued with spirit. Pagan systems are very spiritual, very, very spiritual systems, extremely spiritual. But their understanding of that spirit is that the spirits are fragmented. Everything is imbued with a spirit. The rock is imbued with a spirit. The antelope is imbued with a spirit. The car is a spirit. But all those spirits are disparate. And indeed, they go to war, these spirits, when they have problems. They duke it out. They fight. One of them emerges the winner. And, you know, he stays on top for a while until another spirit comes and topples him. This is the worldview. This is the fundamental worldview of the idolatrous system. We see in Bereishis Rabbah Avraham Avinu's confrontation with Nimrod, and just to remind everyone before, Avraham is rallying an active rebellion against the project of Nimrod to build the tower. This is in Bereishis Rabbah in Perek Lamed Ches, Simen Yud Gimel. Excuse me. Nosve Umosre le Nimrod. Avram Avinu was captured and handed over to Nimrod. Okay, this is, again, after Avram is fomenting an active rebellion against the tower, he's taken and he's brought to Nimrod. Amar le, niskod lenura. So Nimrod says, bow down to the fire. And again, as we know, and this is an important thing to highlight again, fire was the primary deity or divine image in this society. This was like a proto-Zoroastrian type of religion going on. So he tells Avram, bow to the fire. Amar le Avram, b'niskud lamaya, dematfin lenura. He said, why shouldn't I bow down to the water? The water extinguishes the fire. Amar le Nimrod, nisgud lamaya. Okay, fine, so bow down to the water. Amar le inke nisgud la'anana, datayin maya. Says Avram, I should bow down to the clouds because the clouds contain the water. Amar le nisgud la'anana. So Nimrod said, okay, fine, so bow down to the clouds. Amar le imke nisgud larucha demevader anana. So Avram says, maybe I should bow down to the wind because the wind can dissipate the clouds. can disperse the clouds. Amar le Nimrod, nisgod l'rucha, fine, so bow to the wind. Amar le v'nisgod l'barinasha desavel rucha. So he said, I should bow down to a person because a person can stand before the wind. The cloud can't stand before the wind. It's dispersed by the wind, but a human being can stand before the wind. Amar le milinat mishtai, says Nimrod, you're just trying to confuse me. Eini mishtachave el l'or. He says, no, I'm going back to the original thing. I'm going back to the fire. Hare ari mashlichacha besocho. I'm going to throw you into it. And the God that you pray to, he'll save you. If he wants. Meaning he's mocking him. He's mocking Avraham, obviously. This is, again, we focused on this theme many, many times. That when the Midrash is giving us a narrative, almost always, it's telling us things in an archetypical format, regardless of whether the actual incident occurred or not. The reason that the Midrash is telling us is that this is the argument between Avraham and Nimrod. Whether or not they had this conversation, it's not the point. They probably didn't have this conversation. I don't know. Could be that they did. Doesn't matter.
A similar story.
Yeah. Right. But it's not in the context of Avraham and Nimrod.
Not at all, but it has these 10 things.
Nachon. I made a very nice kids book on that with the stone cutter, right? The guy who's chiseling away the stones. Uh-huh. Where was I saying? Correct. This is the argument between Avram and Nimrod. The argument. Nimrod is saying, look, this is the most powerful thing. This is the most powerful thing. We should bow down to it because it's the most powerful thing. This should be our aspiration, our value, because it's clearly the most powerful thing. Says Avram, if you examine the world for 3 seconds, you'll see that there is no such thing as the most powerful thing because the whole world is interdependent on each other. Everything has a weakness. Everything has a strength. And the only reason that that there's any stability whatsoever is because those weaknesses and strengths are able to form a symbiotic relationship. The fire sometimes put out by the water, the water is contained by the clouds and the wind, and the human, right, the human comes out on top of, wait, the human can fall prey to the fire. Right? So it's a circle. It's not circular in the sense of, you know, not making sense. It's circular in the sense that it is the circle of life circular. Meaning it's the symbiosis that allows the world to be. And this is what Avram is pointing out. There is no ultimate one value that we have to focus on. We have to focus on what is the thing that can contain all of those things together. It's a completely different perspective. It's like Peterson says, he has a great line, the difference between an ideology and a religion. What's the difference between an ideology and a religion? A religion tries to take everything into account. That's the difference. What does that mean? An ideology is looking for the best thing. And they're competing ideologies. They compete. I say, this is the best thing. You say, that's the best thing. Okay, let's duke it out. Let's figure out which is the best. Which is the best thing? That's one type of question. A completely different question is, what is the thing that can bind all of the things together? That is a completely different question. And that was the question of Avraham Avinu. And that is the question of Emunah. That's the question of Emunah. What is going to bring Emunah, trust, faith, back into the world? That Emunah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu used to generate the world into being, that interconnectivity, that symbiotic relationship that allows the world to exist, that is the focus of Avraham Avinu. We see by the Bris Bein HaBasarim, the covenant between the parts, that is the foundational covenant between Avraham and God. God gives him the terms of the Bris, and he says that you will have children that I'm going to make into a great nation. Look at the heavens. Can you count the stars of the heavens? Just like the stars are so numerous, so too your children will be numerous. And the pasuk continues, Ve'emin b'Hashem. And Avraham had emuna in God. Vayachshevei lo tzedakah. And God considered that, considered Avraham's act of emuna as an act of tzedakah. An act of tzedakah. Unkelus over here translates this word tzedakah. How does Unkelus translate it? Schus, the merit. Where else in the Torah do we see this, this idea of tzedakah? In Sefer Devarim, we're going to get into the halachic mode soon, Rabosai, just to give you a warning, where we're shifting to. Okay. In Perek Chaf Dalad of Sefer Devarim, we learn a very interesting halacha. Excuse me, this is Bamidbar, not Devarim. Devarim Chaf Dalad. The pasuk tells us. When your friend owes you money, do not come into his house to take something as a collateral. Rather, stand outside. And the man that you come to that owes you money, he'll take the collateral outside to you. And if he's a poor person, You should not spend the night with the collateral. Hashev tashivlo, rather you have to return it to him. Kivo Hashem ishvashachav b'salmaso u'berachecha. And you have to return the collateral that you gave to him so that he can use it that at night. And you will be blessed. Ulacha tiyet tzedakah lifnei Hashem elokecha. And it will be tzedakah for you before Hashem your God. In the same way that Unkelus translates this word tzedakah by Avraham, it's the same way that the word is translated here as schus, a merit. Now, what does this mean, tzedakah? What is the technical meaning of the word tzedakah? Okay, the word tzedakah means something that you don't have to do. You don't really have to do it, but you do it anyway. That's what tzedakah means. The Gemara in Kiddushin, and this appears many places, but Kiddushin is the primary sugya. If I remember correctly, Daf Yud Gimel. No, excuse me, Daf Mem. It's not Daf Yud Gimel. It's Daf Mem. It's Mem Beis, I believe, but don't quote me on that. The Gemara in Kiddushin says that there is something called the Kinyan of Rebbe Yitzchak. What is the Kinyan of Rebbe Yitzchak? The Kinyan of Rebbe Yitzchak means that someone who takes a collateral, who is given a collateral, after the time of a loan, he owns it. He owns it. He makes a kinyan. He has a kinyan. He owns the collateral. Says Rabbi Yitzchak, what's my raya that he owns the collateral? How do I know that he owns it? Because the pasuk says, ulecha tiyet tzedakah me'im Hashem elokecha. If it's not yours, how could there be tzedakah? The fact that you're giving it back to him. If it belongs to the guy and you're giving it back to him, that's not called tzedakah. That's just called giving back. That's called Hashavas Aveda, maybe. Right? Giving back a lost object. Right? But if it belongs to you and you're giving it back, that's called tzedakah. Rabosai, the instrument by which emuna is established in the world is this action called tzedakah. That's what that means. Listen to the circle that's going on over here. Reuven lent Shimon money because Shimon was in trouble and Shimon needed some money, so Reuven lent him money. And Shimon, because he wants to show that he's trustworthy, he gives Reuven a collateral so that he'll have something so that he won't worry about getting his money back. And Reuven, in turn, gives the collateral back to him at night so that he can use it. Do you understand how there's this perpetual circle of trust going on over here? You're in trouble, so I gave you money. He said, okay, I'll give you a collateral to make sure that you're not worrying about your money. And I'll give the collateral back to make sure that, you know, that you can use it when you need to. This is the circle of tzedakah. This is the loop of tzedakah. The loop of tzedakah. And just like the foundational tzedakah of Avraham Avinu was what strengthened this attribute of emuna, all emuna in the world. All emuna in the world is activated through the act of tzedakah. Tzedakah. Tzedakah is emuna in action. That's what it is. I don't have to give this to you because it's mine. I don't have to. La halacha, I don't have to. It's actually mine. But I do it anyway. I do it anyway. Because there has to be emunah in the world. There has to be. And this is, yes.
The way the Rambam describes it, the whatever it's called, in the halacha, it's very like, sounds like, you know, like the way like in Milyrachim Ma'achalach, the whole thing, like, he talks about also some like, the lesson of like that relationship between two brothers, of, like that's like, we need that relationship between them, is that's the relationship of Tzilachah. Yeah. So it seems like a similar, I don't know the words exactly.
Anyway, Rabosai. And as the pasuk says, "V'shachav b'salmaso uveiracheka," through this act of tzedakah, you will be blessed. This is the final step of the amuna circle. You have amuna in this person; you believe in him, and because you believe in him, you're willing to give tzedakah. You're willing to do an act of tzedakah. You're willing to go out on a limb. That's what it means, tzedakah. You're willing to go out on a limb. And as a result of going out on the limb, you're blessed. The blessing comes from going out on a limb, from acting out your emunah. The ave'al zeh ne'emar. And on this, the pasuk in Mishlei says, the ish emunah rov brachos. The man of emunah is abundant in blessing. How does he know that? He knows that because it's the pshat in the pasuk, Rabosai, that the emunah circle brings about blessing. The he'emin ba'ashem, v'yachshaveh tzedakah uverachecha. Pshat, just the pasuk pshat on the pasuk. This is the three milestone, so to speak, circle of emuna. You believe in the thing, you put yourself out on a limb for that thing, and you're blessed because of that. And that is the symbiotic circle of the bria, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu believed in the world, and the world, the different aspects of the world can have tzedakah with each other, and because of that, the world is blessed. And Avram Avinu is the source of blessing for the whole world. V'nivrachu v'cha kol mishpachos ha'adama. You will bring blessing back into the world. I didn't think of this makor before we came here. But the Midrash Rabbah, the beginning of Parashas Lech Lecha, states how the entire world was blessed by Avram Avinu. Afilu sfinos bechrache hayam nisbarachu b'shvil Avram Avinu. Even the far-flung ships in the middle of nowhere, they received blessing because of Avram Avinu. That same Midrash goes on to say that people who were known to be righteous, people who were known to be exceptionally giving people, and it brings the example of Eov. Eov, as the pasuk says explicitly in the opening chapters of Eov, that Eov was an incredibly generous person. And people would trip over themselves, as the Midrash, in order to be able to have anything from Eov's possessions. If Eov was giving things out, if he was having a meal, just to get a kazayas of the meal of Eov, or to get one pruta from Eov. Because they knew that the blessing attached to that was invaluable. Emuna, tzedakah, bracha. In the Parsha, we learn about this very interesting society of Sodom Ubenosel. First of all, just to take a step back to last week, we talked about the war of the four and five kings, that again, which was an attempt to destroy the Avraham movement. What was the target of the four kings when they came into Eretz Canaan? The target was Kol Arei Akikar, as the pasuk says in Parshas Vaye, right? In Parshas Lech Lecha. Vayehi bimei Amraphel, was in the days of Amraphel, i.e. Nimrod. Asu milchama, they came to wage war. Es bera melech Sodom, es birsha melech Amora, shinav melech Adma, shem ever melech Tzvoim. And Melech Bela Hitzoar. Sodom, Amora, Adma, Tzvoim, Tzoar. All the cities of the Kikar. All the cities that in this week's Parsha are destroyed. Tzoar is let off, as we'll see in a moment. It's let off so that Lot will have a place to escape. But these are the places that the kings come to destroy. They come to fight these places. What is the deal with these places, Rabosai? What's going on with these places? So listen to Arashi in this week's Parsha. Listen to Arashi, okay? Rashi says, This is after the city is already in the being, in the process of being destroyed. And Lot says, listen, let me go and run away to the city of Tzoar. Ha'irazos Krova. This city is Krova. It's close. Says Rashi, and he's quoting from Chazal in the Bavli and Shabbat, Krova Yeshivasa Nishyashva Mikarov. Not close geographically, but close timeline-wise. Meaning it's closer in history. It's not as old. Lefikach lonis mala sa'ata. Therefore, it hasn't yet reached the peak of wickedness, and you don't have to destroy it. It's bad, but it hasn't gotten as bad as Sodom and Amorah have gotten. Umayi krivasa, says Rashi, how is it closer in time? How is it newer? Midora palaga. It's closer in time from the generation of the dispersion. Shenispalgu ha'anoshim, that all of mankind became dispersed. V'ischilalis yashev ish bimkomo. Every man and every person settled in a different place. Vihi ha'isa bishnas mos peleg. This was in the year of the death of Peleg, the grandson of Shem. Umisham ve'adkan nun be'eshana. And from that time, from the time of the Palago, when people started dispersing from Or Kasdim and settling in the different places in the world, it was 52 years. 52 years. This area has been settled for 52 years. Okay? And Rashi continues to give some of the timeline over here. V'tzoar ichre yeshiva sa'achre yeshiva Sodom. Tzoar was settled after Sodom. V'chavroseah shana achas hi shenemar imalta na b'gematria na. Fine. Yudal. It was settled a year after Sodom. Okay? What is this saying, Rabbos? I think of the implications of this Rashi. Sodom, Amora, and Svoim, and all these cities, these are the refugees coming from Ur Kasdim. In other words, when we learned last week from the Rambam and from other sources, that the people coming, that Avraham leaves Or Kasdim and comes into Canaan with all of these tens of thousands of followers, where are they settling? This is where they're settling. These are Ki'ilu Avraham's people. These are Ki'ilu, the people that follow Avraham from Or Kasdim into Canaan.
Did Avraham come when he was 75?
Huh?
Did Avraham come when he was 75?
What?
People came earlier.
You're talking about the discrepancy in the age with...
Wait, I think the Torah says we came there at 75.
Okay.
And then it says
Nachon.
At 52 is when
Moshe Tzvi is pointing out that there is a chronological discrepancy, because here Rashi says that Avram, that at age 48, these people settle Sodom and Amorah. And the Torah says that that Avram came into Eretz Canaan at the age of 75. So, not to get too technical, but the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer clarifies that, no, excuse me, not Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. The Seder Olam Rabbah, in the first parak of Seder Olam Rabbah, it clarifies that Avram Avinu came into Eretz Yisrael the first time at the age of 52. That was his initial coming into Eretz Canaan. He stays in Canaan for a while, after Bris Ben Abasarim goes back to Haran for 5 years and then comes back. So when the Torah says that he comes that he's 75 when he leaves Haran, it means leaving Haran for the second time. So that's just a technical note. You could look this up in the first paragraph of Seder Olam Rama. But the point that I'm trying to highlight is that these people from Sodom and Amorah are the people that leave Or Kasdim with Avram. They basically they're running away from Or Kasdim just like Avram is running away from Or Kasdim.
This isn't the Nefesh, though. This isn't the Nefesh Asher
Asu B'charam. It could very well be that they're included in the Nefesh Asher Asu B'charam. It could very well be. Why not? It could be that these are people are included. Okay? But Rabosai, this gives context as to why Avraham wants to pray for these people. He really wants them to be saved. Not only that, but in last week's Parsha, it seems to be that Avraham gives Lot an option. He says, listen, wherever you want to go, you choose where you want to go, and I'll go in the other direction. It seems that Avram is also willing to go to Sodom, at least in theory. He'd be willing to go there.
He says to go right and left, and then we'll go straight at Sodom. And Sodom is, right and left would be...
Someone pointed this out, that right and left, when it says right and left, it means north and south.
Right.
Correct?
So
where are they having this conversation?
They're looking towards Sodom.
No.
That's
why?
Rashi says
no, it says in the pasuk that Lot looks out to Sodom. I'm saying, where are they located geographically when they're having this conversation?
The pshat is that
they're in the northern Shomron. So it could very well be that when it says left, meaning south, excuse me, right, meaning south, south meant south, southeast. It's not directly south. It's not like the Negev south. It's south in relative to where they are. But be that as it may, the point is that Avraham seems willing to go wherever Lot doesn't want to go. In theory, Avraham could have been willing to go to Sodom. I think it's a very strong possibility. Not only that, but we see that when Lot comes into Sodom, what is his position in Sodom? What's his role in the city? He's a shofet. He's a judge. He becomes a judge. V'hu yoshev b'shar Sodom. Shar Sodom. Noda b'sha'arim bala b'shiv toim zikne aretz. He'll be known in the sha'arim with sitting with all the other zakenim of the place. Because that's where the zakenim sit. That's where you judge cases. And indeed, the people of Sodom, when they come into schism with Lot, they said, Hashafot tishpot, you're going to come and judge us. We have our own ways of doing things here. That pasuk that we quoted from the Balaturim in the beginning, that God makes known to Avram that he was chosen because he's going to be the introducer of tzedakah and mishpat into the world. When does that pasuk come up, Rabosai? What's the context of that verse? God says, am I going to hide from Avraham that which I'm going to destroy Sodom? Am I going to hide from him my plans? I chose him because I knew that he's going to teach his household to do tzedakah and mishpat. That's the context of this verse. There's something about Sodom and Amorah that is highlighting this problem of tzedakah and mishpat, the break of tzedakah and mishpat in the world. What is that break? What is the problem of Sodom and Amorah? Okay, this is the last concept, and then we'll call it an evening. Besides, people think that the issue with Sodom and Amorah had something to do with some type of sexual deviance, some type of immorality. It's even codified in many legal frameworks. This idea of sodomy. Right, it's a specific act in that domain. However, the chait of Sodom had very little to do with that. Very little, as we are told explicitly by the Navi in Yechezkel. This is in Yechezkel, Perek Tes Zion, Pasuk Mem Tes. Perek Tes Zion, Pasuk Mem Tes. Yechezkel is giving a long list. The prophet is giving a long list of different cities that became corrupted and destroyed. Says the Navi, Hine ze haya avon Sodom achoseich. This was the sin of Sodom. Gaon sivas lechem. It was mighty and satiated with bread, meaning very wealthy. Vishalvas hashket hayala, and it had peace and tranquility. Veliv noseha, and to its satellite cities, referring to all the other cities that we mentioned before, Amora, Adma, etc. Viyad ani ve'evion lo hichzika, and it did not support the poor. Vatigbena v'ta'asena to'eva lefonai, and it became mighty and did an abomination before me. And therefore I removed them as I saw fit. This was the chait of Sodom. And indeed, Rabosai, we see that when Chazal talk about the Midah of Sodom, it is everything to do with this problem. The Mishnah in Avos, in Perek Hey, Mishnah Yud, Ha'omer, Arba Midos Ba'adam, there are four qualities in a person, four possible qualities. Perek Hey, Mishnah Yud. Ha'omer Shali Shali V'Shelcha Shelcha Zu Mida Beinonis. A person that says that what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours, this is the intermediary attribute. The Yesh Omrim, and there are those that say, Zu Midas Sedom. This is the quality of the Sodomites. What does this mean, Rabosai? It's a kind of a, that's a pretty big spectrum, right? Option A is, this is the intermediary average attribute. Option B is, this is the Mida that's so bad that God needed to destroy everyone in a conglomerate, in a fiery hailstorm. Which one is it? Is the Mida Bainerness, or is it Sodom? The answer is, Rabosai, Mida Beinonis means that this is the baseline. It means that we have to, that what's mine is mine, and what's yours is yours, and we have to respect that. We have to respect that I have my property and you have your property. And from there, we can talk about sharing. I'll take some of your stuff, you'll take some of my stuff. But the baseline that everyone starts off with is Shali, Shali, V'shulcha, Shulcha. And from there, we can go further. The attribute of the chassid, as the Mishnah says, Shali, Shulcha, Shali, Shelcha, what's mine is yours. That's what the Chassid says. The Chassid, the Baal Chesed, can say what's mine is yours. But it has to be based on what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours. It has to be, you have to start from that distinction. However, when a person takes that attribute of Shali, Shali, Shelcha, Shelcha, what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours, and he makes that into an ideal, that becomes Midas Sodom. When that becomes the end-all, be-all, that is the attribute of Sodom. That's the attribute of Sodom. And indeed, the Sodomites were so stringent on this attribute that they were willing to do whatever it took to enforce this. And this is the stories which I'm sure everyone is familiar with, brought in the Gemara and Sanhedrin, of these sadistical types of punishments that would be inflicted upon the Sodomites if anyone brought in a guest, or if a guest tried to come in and to freeload off of the city. They would torture them in horrible ways. They were willing to do whatever they wanted, whatever was necessary to enforce this policy.
Yeah.
So you're jumping ahead to the other thing. When Chazal say that there is an idea lahalacha of kofin al midas sedom, that Beis Din can force someone to not abide by the attribute of the Sodomites. What is this case of that of not abiding by the attribute of the Sodomites? It's a classic example, and I'm oversimplifying this, but just for purpose of this discussion, it serves as an example. There's a din in the Gemara that's brought in a few places of the Bar Matzra. Bar Matzra, okay? It means that right, Max is selling his field, okay? And I am Max's neighbor. So I say to Max, listen, I'm your neighbor. If you sell me your field, then I'll just be able to expand my current field. It'll be great for me. And Max says, no, I don't want to sell it to you. Why don't you want to sell it to me? Haha, I don't want to sell it to you. Just to spite you, I'm not going to sell it to you. Right? If I can prove that Max doesn't have a good reason to not sell it to me, Beis Din can force him to sell it to me as opposed to someone else. That's Kofin al Midas Sodom. Now, yes, there are many exceptions to this rule. Let's say Max wants to sell it to a family member as opposed to some random guy. That's a good reason. Let's say he wants to give it as a gift and not sell it. That's also a good reason. There are many reasons. But if it's clear from the context that he's not selling it to me just to spite me, that's called Midas Sodom. And Kofin al Midas Sodom, we can force someone to not act that way. Beis Din can force someone to not act that way. This is the attribute of Sodom. And where did they get this, Rabosai? And this is my theory. I can't prove this, admittedly, but I think that in context, this is just what makes the most sense. If the people from Sodom are, in fact, refugees from Ur-Kasdim, coming from that society of totalitarian nightmare, of everyone is co-opted to this tower project, and people are dying in the streets because of this. It's becoming so dysfunctional and so horrible that people are literally dying in the streets, and they run away to Canaan to form an alternative. But they go too far in the other direction. Their policy is, no one can touch anyone's stuff. What a man owns is his. No one can touch it. And that sounds great. And indeed it is great. You know why, how we know it's great? Because the Pasuk tells us that Sodom was a thriving society. Thriving. That's why Lot chooses it. And indeed the prophet that we just read in Yechezkel, it says, Gaon, it was mighty. Savas Lechem, and had tremendous wealth. Shalva Vashgate. You're wealthy and you're peaceful. What's better than that? That's what a society is supposed to produce. Wealth and peace. That's what they're supposed to do. And they had that in spades. So indeed, that policy goes a long way to making people prosper. But it was but in the end of the day, it was corrupt. It was corrupted because it had no sense of tzedakah. It had no sense of tzedakah. It had broken emunah completely. The emunah that God had put into the world, that all the disparate parts can rely on each other, and if they're in trouble, they can lean on the other person, and they can get tzedakah from someone. Tzedakah, perush, again, tzedakah, that someone can go out on a limb for them and help them out. That was completely broken. Not only was it broken, but that was the policy of the society that was forbidden. They outlawed tzedakah. They literally outlawed it. And you think, oh my God, how could they be so wicked? No. You see that it actually produced great results. If you outlaw charity, then people work. People, you know, put in the input. They use their resources. They use their resources wisely, and it produces a great society. But in the end of the day, it was incredibly corrupt. What is the to'eva that Yechezkel says the to'eva, the abomination? The abomination in Lashon HaKodesh, in the Tanakh, could be referring to either idolatry or sexual perversion. Those are the two things that to'eva is referring to. We don't see any signs of idolatry in Sodom. In fact, I think that theologically they were actually in line with Avram. As we see, Lot comes in and he's the judge. They accept him as a judge. At least somewhat they accept him. So theologically they're probably in line with Avram. What's the to'eva? These people that come to the house, they surround the house and say, bring these guys out so that we can know them. B'nei da'osam. This was the policy of what we do to people that try to come and freeload in the city. That was the to'eva. That's the to'eva. You see what's going on. You see the level of depravity, the level of wickedness, the level of cruelty. That they were willing to go so hard, and not to kill them. No, killing doesn't help. If you kill the guy, he's not going to tell the story. This is, you do this to them, they'll go around and say, no, Sodom, you don't go there. Don't go there. This was the policy. The to'eva was to reinforce the yad ani ve'evyon lo'ichzika. And this is why Avraham is told about this. He says, listen, Avraham, these guys, they're going against the covenant of Emunah. They've outlawed Emunah in their society. I have to destroy them. And I know that you bear the responsibility of tzedakah and mishpat in the world. What do you have to say for them? Avraham says, listen, I know they're really bad, but like, let's say there's a few guys there that are actually doing tzedakah and mishpat. You're going to destroy the whole city because most of them are not, but a few of them are. And says, okay, fine. If there are a few that aren't doing it, that are continuing tzedakah and mishpat, I'll let it go. I'll let it slide. But there isn't even 10. There's not even a minion of people in Sodom that are upholding tzedakah and mishpat. There's not even a minion. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to do away with the city. And as the fire and brimstone comes down from Shemayim to wipe out this place, Avraham watches. He watches it happen. Right? He says. No. Vayashkem Avraham baboker el makom asher amad sham espnei Hashem. He comes up the next morning and he looks over to the place that he had stood before God the previous day, arguing with God, so to speak, arguing him down to try to have, you know, to find some merit for the city. Vayashkef al pnei Sodom, and he looks out onto the city of Sodom. Al pnei kol eretz hakikar, and on the whole plain of the Amamelach. Vayar, and he sees vihine Allah kitor, the smoke rose up, kikitor hakivshan, like the smoke of the furnace, like the smoke of the furnace. You see what's going on, Rabosai? You see what happened here? Avraham and these people ran away from the furnace, and they had all the reason in the world to run away from the furnace of Ur Kasdim. They ran away. And they implemented certain steps in order to make sure that this, something like this would never happen again. Never again will we experience this horrible collectivist totalitarian nightmare. And they ended up becoming the Kivshan. Literally, they became the Kivshan. They became a Kivshan Ha'esh. People can look this up at their leisure, but the Smithsonian did an incredible piece on the archaeological discovery of Sodom, which is a city they believe is actually on the Jordanian side. It's not clear. It's not clear in the Torah where exactly Sodom is located. Only that it's in the Kikar HaYarden. That's what it says. It's in the Kikar HaYarden.
Torah says there was no Jordan. I mean, that area before, I think the river, the sea only came after.
No, it says that. No, it says that there's a Yam HaMelech there. It says that there's a Yam HaMelech there. Yeah. The Torah indicates that there's a Yam HaMelech already. The dig called Tel Al Haram, if I'm not mistaken, is the name. But people can look this up at their leisure. The city is an estate where they could see that there was an instantaneous burning of the entire city in one flash, and that the heat that was required to produce the different minerals. I'm sure you're familiar with the Trinity nuclear explosion experiment that they did in New Mexico before they dropped the bombs on Japan. So they did tests in the desert in New Mexico, okay? And the blast of the nuclear explosion was so hot it produced a new type of mineral that they had never seen before called trinitite. It's this green glassy type of thing. It can only be produced by tremendous heat. and they found this in this site. The entire city was consumed in one flash of 3,000 degrees. In one instant, the whole thing was destroyed. 3,000 degrees. That's very odd. Boom. The entire thing taken out. And this is the Kivshan Ha'esh. They made themselves into a Kivshan Ha'esh. Because without realizing it, they became their own version of a totalitarian nightmare. And this is why Avraham is told about this. He says, listen, You have to be able to carry both sides of this. You have to be able to carry the mishpat side of making sure that the individuals aren't taken advantage of. That's the mishpat. Mishpat means if someone steals something, you make sure that the thief returns what he stole. That's mishpat. Tzedakah is the other side. Tzedakah is making sure that everyone can rely on each other, that people can actually go out on a limb for each other. As the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Gemara in Sanhedrin, unbelievable. I was going to quote the Mordechai the Mordechai in Bava Metzia. It's him in Reish Nun Gimel. Mordechai in Bava Metzia. Okay? He says, Rishos ala dayanim ladun lifnim yishur asadin. It says that there are exceptional cases where the dayanim can instruct the litigants. Whether they can force them to do it is a different question, but They seem to have some limited power to instruct the litigants in extreme situations. He says when the plaintiff is exceedingly wealthy, and the plaintiff is a completely impoverished individual, the dayanim have the ability to force the litigant to accept the compromise. And the Mordechai says, and how do we know this? As the Gemara in Sanhedrin says in Daf Lamed Zayin, Lo nechrava liyushalayim ela shehem midineim al din Torah. The reason Yerushalayim was destroyed is because they stuck to the laws of the Torah. Says the Sanhedrin, what do you mean? They stuck to the laws of the Torah? That's what you're supposed to do. He says, no. They didn't go lifnim yishur hadin. That's what it means. They stuck to the mishpat. They stuck to the bare bones of the law, and they didn't go beyond. They didn't go beyond the letter of the law. Going me'aver is inculcating tzedakah into mishpat. Inculcating tzedakah into mishpat. And this is the burden of Avraham Avinu, to be the Dayan who's going to be done din emes, but also be able to bring shalom. Shalom. That's the fourth step, Rabosai. Emuna, tzedakah, bracha, shalom. Shalom. The peace. Peace doesn't mean the peace in the secular context of absence of conflict. Peace means like milashon shalem, wholeness. There's a wholeness. There's a unity. There's a symbiotic relationship with everything. To be able to be a, to be to have din, emes, and shalom. all in one, to be able to carry that, to be able to carry that balance, is the chiddush of Avraham Avinu, tzedakah and nishbat. And through carrying this, Avraham Avinu is the source of blessing for the entire world. V'nivrachu v'chal kol mishpachos adam. Chizku v'yam mitzvavchem kol biyachad im Hashem.
By the way, is there a thing, the fact that often